This is a podcast of the City of Fairbanks City Council meeting. Stand by for the call to order, or else we'll be joining the meeting already in progress.
Welcome to our first Diversity Council meeting since March 2020. The City of Fairbanks recognizes that our community is a diverse one with a wide variety of ethnic backgrounds, cultures, beliefs, and orientations, and recognizes this diversity as an asset and a resource for the community. The establishment of this Fairbanks Diversity Council can provide the City Council and Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly with advice and recommendations to promote equal opportunity for all members of the public. So, Clerk, I'll have you call the roll, please.
Shalissa Thomas. I'm going to have to unmute everybody. Sorry about this. Hold on. Here's my... Sorry, guys. I'm just going to do it this way.
So why don't you go ahead and have everybody self-mute so we could eliminate background noise. And do you have to have a verbal here? Andy, could they raise a hand?
I'll just call the roll and say if they're here or not. How about that?
Okay.
Shalissa Thomas is here.
Yep.
Andrew Aquino is here. Doug Tolley is here. Jose Martinez is here. Juanita Webb is here. Kelvin Lee, I do not see Mr. Lee. Rita Williams is here. Rita Davis is not. Bobby Dorton is not. Sarah Harriger is here. June Rogers is here. Angela Foster Snow is here. And Mayor Matherly is here. In the room also, we have Chief of Staff Mike Meeks. Also on the Zoom call, we have Mike Sanders, City Housing and Homeless Coordinator. And we have one member of the public here in the room.
Okay, thank you very much, Clerk. We'll skip the pledge for right now, because what I'd like to do this evening, a lot of what tonight is going to be is I've got a lot of information for the group. I'd like tonight to be a great information tool and presentation for the Fairbanks Diversity Council. Let me wait for Bobby to check in. Bobby, are you there?
I'm here, Mr. Matherly.
All right.
The Beatles, I like that, the Beatles.
Thank you, Bobby.
Mayor, I forgot to mention Chief Reeder is also on the Zoom call.
Chief Reeder. So what I would like tonight to be for everybody on the line is I'm going to give you a lot of updates tonight from the city. I've asked several people in the administration to join tonight. We're going to cover a lot of ground. And at the end of the meeting, what I'd like us to do is to have a date set to pick up where we left off in March with the Diversity Action Plan. Remember, we had that buffet, we had that dinner, and then COVID hit. It's been a tough year for everybody. So by the end of this meeting, I'd like to have that date set for August. But I have a lot of ground to cover with all of you tonight, and I'm really glad that a lot of you could make it. Right off the bat, I'm going to ask Jose to look at the camera there. I asked Jose, we had two vacancies. We're still waiting on the borough. We're still waiting on the borough to fill Jeff Walters' seat. But I asked, and Jose Martinez did accept an appointed position on the Fairbanks Diversity Council. Jose's been in town forever. I've known him for a long time. A lot of you must know him as well. And he brings a really great background of Rotarian. He's a Rotarian. He owns his own business. He's very immersed in the Hispanic Latino community, and I thought he would be a great resource. So Jose, why don't you give us a quick hello, and then I'll continue on with our stuff, please.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
All right. Good evening, everybody. Mayor Matherly and the fellow council members, everyone present, I want to just thank you for the opportunity to allow me to serve in this capacity, and hopefully the contributions that we will be able to make together towards the betterment of our city. Like Mayor Matherly said, I've known Jim for over 30 years from, of course, school dances. I think that's a pretty staple for many of us youngsters. And not only that, a mentor, a great friend. He helped me start my DJ business over 20 years ago. I am immersed in the community, not just the Latino, heavily in the Latino community, as I grew up a Mexican Alaskan, but also just in diverse communities with the Black, the Afro-American community, the Native community. I have the white community, everybody in the, you know, I have connections, friends in all sorts and different backgrounds. So one of the beauties of my life is just to be able to learn more about the different cultures. And I hope to bring my experience as a financial professional, as a Rotarian, as a father, as a community member, and just as a friend to the council. So I look forward to serving with you. Thank you.
Thank you, Jose. Just so the group knows, I've been conducting most of our city council meetings over the telephone, and a lot of the meetings I do with Zoom. So when I do things like asking for a first and a second, I'll probably just call you out by name to make the first and the second so we don't talk over each other. That seems to work really well. I'd like this meeting to be as well run as I can be. So now's the time for citizens' comments. Danny, does a member of the public, actually we need to do the approval of the agenda first. So let's do that first. Shalissa, can I have a motion from you to approve the agenda, please? Just hold your hand up if you can do it for me. All right, cool. And Kanita, can you second that for her? All right, cool. So we got a first and a second. So thank you, ladies. We have our agenda approved tonight. I have a lot of reports. I'll do a lot of the talking tonight along with the staff I've invited. Now's the time for citizens' comments. And we are taking comments on email. That's what we've been doing for the city council. And anybody that's in the chambers, Clerk, is there anybody in the room that wants to give public comment?
The person here does not wish to provide spoken comment, and I have not received any emails to be read into the record.
Okay. So hearing none, citizens' comments are closed. The next thing on the agenda is mayor's comments and report. So let me go ahead and just update this group on several things that I think will be good information for all of you. I want to talk about the CARES Act. I want to talk about COVID update. But I want to first touch on Mike Sanders, if I could. You know, this year alone, we've had a lot of groups that have been affected by the COVID-19 pandemic, not the least of which has been our less vulnerable community, our more vulnerable community. Mike has done outstanding work with a lot of the nonprofits in town to watch over some of the folks that are struggling without a home. I'm really happy to say that in many ways, we really had Anchorage beat when it came to outreach and protection of folks. So I've asked Mike to join us. I know he has another engagement tonight with his son, but I really wanted him to be the first out of the gate to give you a really good update on that part of our population that is very vulnerable since it all started when it was super cold outside since March, as you're aware. So Mike, I really appreciate you being here, and I'll just turn it over to you for a bit. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you, Mayor, and thanks for letting me go first. As the mayor mentioned, my son and I have a competition that we do every Tuesday with one of the clubs around town. So we're really lucky here in Fairbanks for many reasons, but our nonprofits are top-notch. We have some of the best nonprofits in the state, without doubt. Way before COVID was... You know, before we even sure that it was going to be the crisis that it turned into, our different agencies had already been meeting. Long before there was, you know, a unified command or any of that stuff, we had already had some COVID-19 meetings with our different agencies. And we started off really small. We were very, very targeted. At first, we just went with their emergency shelters and FMH and public health. And it was just those entities. So we had... We had the DOOR, the Center for Nonviolent Living, and Fairbanks Rescue Mission talking about, like, hey, what's the best practices? What do we need to do? What do we need to, you know, like, what's the worst case scenario that we should prepare for? And then I think within probably a week, we started opening up to all the different housing providers in town. So then we brought in, we brought in TCC, we brought in Restore Incorporated, we brought in No Limits, we brought in all these other housing providers. And so we could all, sit down and talk with the, the doctors like Dr. Simon and the folks from FMH and all the public health nurses that were contributing to, like, hey, this is what you should be prepared for in worst case scenario. And we started this planning so early, and this wasn't on me. This was on the directors of the various nonprofits. They had that foresight to really, really lean into this thing. So we started early enough. I know this is going to seem like a weird thing to say, but we started early enough that we were actually able to order N95 masks. I think by the time a lot of people started like really planning, you couldn't get N95 on Amazon or anywhere else. But we actually started early enough where agencies were able to stock up and get some masks and stuff. So that definitely helped. The other thing that really helped is just the size and scope of our nonprofits. Several years ago, long before I was here, Dennis Wise made some pretty significant contributions to Fairbanks. He donated the building that the Rescue Mission's in, the building that the Food Bank is in, the building that the Center for Nonviolent Living's in, the old Love Inc. building. He just donated a ton of different buildings, and they're all huge. They are set up perfectly for this type of crisis. So the Rescue Mission alone, if we only had the Rescue Mission and no other services, we could still house 174 people. That's phenomenal. On any given night in Fairbanks, we usually have about 200 people experiencing homelessness. So you could take almost all of them into the Rescue Mission, which is pretty awesome. So the mission, we'll start with them since I started mentioning them. We decided not to do what Anchorage did with the, having to take over, they took over Sullivan Arena, and it made perfect sense for them. And that, I am glad that they did. They needed to do that. But they have a totally different setup than we do. Beans Cafe and Brother Francis Shelter, those folks, they're smaller buildings. They're smaller than what we have here, and they're serving a lot more folks than what we have. So they, on pre-COVID, they would have people on mats, side by side, laying on the floor. Whereas in the Rescue Mission, even pre-COVID, they met the CDC guidelines for the COVID-19 pandemic, which is bunks that are head to toe, spaced 3 feet apart. And the Rescue Mission had that to begin with. But when COVID started hitting, they reduced their capacity just a little bit and spread out. So when they spread out, they had at least 6 feet between beds. So even though they were head to toe, they still had at least 6 feet in between beds. So they more than doubled the CDC guidelines there, and they went into lockdown. And most shelters in Alaska didn't do that. But all three of ours did. The Rescue Mission, the Door, and the Center for Nonviolent Living all went into lockdown. The Door, their staff actually locked down with them. So that's such a sacrifice. That we're talking about case managers that literally lived at the door on the, not inside the youth shelter, but on that property for the entirety of the COVID lockdown, which is just amazing. But the Rescue Mission, they ended up spreading out to where they had capacity to quarantine 73 men and 42 women. And they were they had it set up so they could quarantine at different times. So they had different groups of quarantine. And after you'd been there for the 14 days, and you had more freedom and you could go to the common areas. But as new people came in, folks came in off the street or they came in from another community, they had another quarantine area for them. And they had it set up in a way where they could do multiple start dates of the quarantine. And it worked out phenomenally. Big hats off to them. And there's so many nonprofits here in town that it's going to be hard for me to thank them all. But so that's how we were a little bit different than the mayor mentioned, that we're a little different than Anchorage. That was really the big thing, is that we had that those facilities and we had those organizations with the capacity to do that. So right off the bat, we had the shelter part down. We had some of the quarantine going, but that's not everybody. We know that there's people out there that aren't accepting services. They're not looking for any services. They're just not doing it. And no matter how much we try to get folks in, it's just not going to work. You know, we need to just keep constantly trying to build that rapport to bring people into services. At any time in Fairbanks, we have about 50 folks that fit into that category where they definitely need they need the services, but they're not willing to accept it. And for those during the COVID lockdown, for those folks, we still had services going. Almost all the social services still had some sort of capacity. But the three big ones that really stepped up during that time was Breadline in the morning. They were handing out to-go lunch, to-go and to-go breakfast, along with masks, which is a big help. And then No Limits Incorporated, they have in the wintertime, they operate a warming center. No Limits was phenomenal. They averaged about 41 people a day in their warming center. And then they also made it so that anybody in the warming center wanted to stay at night, they would allow them. Now, only four people actually accepted that, but still, that's four people that accepted housing that had refused housing up until then. So it's really awesome that they did that. And the other thing that No Limits did was when they, with the social distancing and stuff, they realized that they were over capacity. They're having a hard time doing social distancing and being able to taking all the people they're having. So they're literally having to have people outside. As soon as that started happening, they asked the community for help. And that's when the Fairbanks Reentry Coalition stepped up. And the Reentry Coalition, in association with the J.P. Jones Center, opened up a secondary warming center that was overflow for the warming center that No Limits is running. And they averaged about 22 people a day. And they set up their hours so that they were open a little bit later, too, so that folks could get a hot breakfast at Stone Soup Cafe, they get a hot lunch at No Limits, and then they get a hot dinner at the J.P. Jones Center and the Secondary Warming Center. But then we get into the hard stuff. The hard stuff is, what do you do with folks that need isolation? And that's something where we were just beating our heads, like trying to figure out how to make this work. We had hotels that were willing to help. We had a couple organizations that were willing to help. Stuff, it costs money. And even though, the state and, some of the federal agencies were saying, hey, you need to provide this. It was like, hey, we're willing to provide it. We don't have the funds for it. And this is, I think this is probably the first time I've publicly thanked the mayor and chief of staff, Mike Meeks. But again, I know I've thanked them both privately, but thank you very much. You guys were complete lifesaver when it came to the isolation funds. We didn't have the ability to fund putting somebody in isolation, and the chief and the mayor both, they're like, hey, make it happen, we gotcha. And that was a game changer right there. I mean, I went from, asking every funder in the state that I could think of, repeatedly for, just a small amount of money, to the city being like, we got you. Again, thank you very much for that. So we've been doing that. That's what's been happening. For folks that are experiencing homelessness and they need a place to stay, No Limits stepped up to, again, No Limits, they stepped up to provide isolation. So they have done the bulk of the isolation for people experiencing homelessness in town. At first we were just taking anybody that public health said, hey, these guys, they don't have a place to stay, they're homeless, they need help. But then we kind of got burnt a little bit, we have since, so now we have a little bit of criteria in there just to make sure that they really are, the most vulnerable people in the community, and that they couldn't afford to isolate on their own. We're rolling with that, and it's been working out really well. If No Limits gets filled, which is very possible with the way the numbers are going up, the Rescue Mission does have some quarantine or some isolation capabilities. It's not quite as much as the quarantine, of course, because it just the way it's set up. And then we also have a couple hotels that are willing to help with isolation as well. The hotels are, it's a little trickier. Most hotels are not interested. Most of them don't want their name to be out there that they're willing to help with isolation. But we do have a couple that have agreed, and I actually confirmed this today, that they are still willing to help us if needed. And I think that's about it. Is there any questions? Did I leave anything out?
No, and I'm glad you did it. I wanted to give you the first crack because I know you got to get off with your son. And I really appreciate it, Mike. I thank you for that. And I might invite you to our next meeting because we're going to do a little bit more roundtable discussion stuff. But thank you for the update. I appreciate it, Mike. Thanks for all the hard work you're doing.
Thanks, everybody. Thank you, sir.
Have fun with your son.
Oh, sure will. Sure will.
All right. Thank you. I know a few people said they had to leave at 7, so my goal is to be done by 7 for sure. Okay, so some more information for all of you is when this thing hit, the city had to act quickly, and we did. We got ahead about 2 weeks ahead of this thing, and what we were able to do is set up working capability off-site. We brought IT in, and we put a lot of our employees home and a lot of them in City Hall. We limited our public meetings, as you know. We waived some of our fees for people that wanted to pay online or over the phone with the clerk's office. It's been an amazing team effort. And I want you all to know that with the recent rise, we did all this before we had our first case that was confirmed in the interior. Now that we've had we're getting 5 to 10 a day and even 20 the other day. I'm going back to that same schedule starting next Monday. I'm closing City Hall to the public other than just appointments. The borough's doing the same thing. So it'll just be only appointments for the public. We're going to do all of our meetings the way we're doing them right now. The safety of the employees is my number one priority. And, you know, we've had several employees actually tested that had exposures. And if you think about the police, the fire, even public works, that it's out in the public every day, they've been at high risk. We've only had one confirmed positive case so far within the city. And that was, you know, and June can touch on that. So she had it too, and it was a nasty thing for her. And I feel for people that have caught this virus. So I'd like to tell the Diversity Council that we'll be doing more of our meetings just like we're doing now. The best we can do. We just have to make that work. Secondly, as you know, the president gave some CARES Act money. I should say that the federal government, two cases, one at FPD. Ah, thank you very much, Chief. She just texted me and corrected me. We do have one positive at FPD as well. It's important that we quarantine and the problem, why we split up departments is that we don't want to get one person sick and take out the whole group. So we have to keep our city services going. Our police, our fire, our ambulance, our snow plowing when it was still wintertime, and our garbage pickup. We can't afford to lose. We have 200 employees at the city. So we have to be careful about that. The city of Fairbanks got $16 million in COVID relief money. We started taking applications last week. Between Margarita Bell, our CFO, and Teal Soden, our public information officer, and a lot of other people in the administration, they set it up online. And we've given almost $5 million so far to the hospital because they applied, because we set a portion aside for medical facilities, a portion for individuals, and a portion for nonprofit groups. It's been going very well. And Love Inc. partnered with us on doing individual monies. We've been sending that out, and we've been also taking business applications right now. We've given out a good fair chunk of money. You have to qualify, of course. You have to apply. They have to be doable expenses, and that's what Margarita's heading up. So we're very pleased that so many people have applied for our monies. Starting August 1st, the borough will start putting their money out. They have $25 million. But this is just for the city proper, because you have to have a city business license to apply for these funds. It's been extremely great to cut checks to people to pay their rent and stuff that was hit during the early part of COVID. And I really appreciate the work of, Jose, the best thing for applying, he just sent me a message. You got to go to the City of Fairbanks website and go to the top, and it says apply for COVID. It's super easy. If you're an individual and you were affected, you can apply. If you own a business and you were affected, you can apply. Businesses can get up to $100,000. Individuals can get up to $5,000. And we've put out you know, press releases. We've given interviews on this. It's been in the newspaper as well. And we cut some more checks today. We're trying to be efficient with our money. Well, not our money, the federal money, the CARES money. And one thing I've instructed our CFO to do is to not keep anything for the city. We're able, though, to refund or reimburse the city for COVID-related expenses. But what I don't want to do is use it to build a new road or to pay off a debt. We can't do that. Other cities have done that, and they've gotten bit. We don't want to go down that road. Everything goes out to medical facilities, individuals and families, and nonprofit organizations. So if you know someone in the city limits that can apply, just direct them to our city website, tag the banner at the top, apply for COVID CARES relief funding. It's really interesting. Oh, look at this. Danny, thank you. There is our website, and there's the banner at the top. See, when Danny and I were talking about this, we didn't know how we would interact, and I'm so glad she took the initiative. Thank you, Danny, for that.
I'm experimenting.
No, experiment all you want. This is going to perfect things. So that was our website, folks. It's really nice, and we're very pleased with that. Thank you for that. Next on our list is a calendar of events. And it's kind of a depressing subject since so many things have been canceled this summer. But now's an opportunity if any of you want to stick up a hand, because Danny can see all of you. She can unmute you and you can let us know if there's a special event you'd like to tell us about. I have nothing to really say from the city side because we're not holding any public events right now. Golden Days is going to be virtual. There's no Tanana Valley State Fair to tell you about. But does anybody here on this call have any calendar of events that they'd like to talk about? Okay, thank you for that. Andrew, do you mind raising a hand if you'll give me a motion to approve the previous minutes of February 11th, please? Thank you. And Doug Tolde, could you give up a hand for a second, please? Thank you, appreciate that. Okay, off to number nine. A huge part of the city's challenges with COVID centers around HR. And I'd like to publicly acknowledge Angela. She's been a rock star through this because she had to take care of employees, COVID time off. How do we pay for it? What if an employee gets sick? She's been just working so hard, both from home and on the road, because she's had to travel. I mean, some people have had to travel through this, and at City Hall. So I'm asking her to come in and give a good human resources report to the group so you can hear about firsthand what's going on here at the city when it involves the employees themselves. And you'll hear more, of course, from Chief Reeder. She'll touch on some HR-related things, too, with the police. So, Angela, I'm going to turn it over to you. Thank you.
Well, good evening, everybody. It's nice to see everybody's faces. It's been too long since we've been together. I miss our group and having a chance to chat about stuff. And it's strange to have to go back now and talk about March, but that's really when this all started. And the city was, like the mayor had shared earlier, we kind of got off to a great start. We were ahead of the game. We started having meetings at the beginning of March in regard to how we were going to facilitate folks if and when they had to work from home. So we got the ball rolling. We were lucky Mike was able to work with IT, facilitate all of the technology that we needed for folks to work from home. And as you know, we have everything from administrative assistants to engineers. Obviously our police support staff have to work from home. There's a ton of technology around that, around the fire department, around our clerk's office. Everybody has different needs. And somehow we were able to pull it all together with our administration backing it up. We were able to get everybody home where they needed to be so they could stay healthy. So that started in March. And I think one of the things that I'm the most proud of is in March when we had our first, essentially, I consider this all like a I keep learning new things as we move through it. It's evolving, this whole situation. And one of the first things that we noticed right away was our employees were going to be missing work if they A, had to be tested, or they B, were exposed and we didn't know if they had were going to test or test positive, and their family members were getting sick and needed to have attention too. So starting right away in March, our employees were put at ease because the administration made the determination that any work that was missed regarding the COVID-19 virus, that they would be able to use administrative leave for that. So not one employee lost time in or money in the month of March. And so right off the bat, we were prepared to step up and help them. Starting April 1, I know a lot of you are probably familiar with the Family-Friendly Coronavirus Response Act and the FFCRA. What that did was, starting April 1, it allowed every employee in an organization with 500 or fewer employees could have up to 80 hours of COVID-funded or federally funded COVID leave. Each employee had the ability to access that if and when something would happen. And there are a list of requirements, but it covers everything from you yourself being exposed, you yourself having COVID, your family members having COVID, or the ability to stay home in an extended FMLA kind of a status if you're worried about or your children's daycare or school has closed and you don't have any other options for care. You can also get two-thirds of your pay to stay home and be with them. So it really opened a lot of doors that we had to jump in there and try to figure out how we were going to manage. But once again, the thing that I guess I was the most proud of since April 1 is our administration, the mayor and Mike, met with the unions and especially with our emergency responders, and they determined that if and when an employee either A, had been exposed and had to be gone for testing and used their 80 hours, and then let's say they came back to work and, you know, hopefully this would never happen, but say maybe a family member then was exposed and they had to stay home with them. And I know this has happened in our police department. Chief Reeder can testify to that. But those employees, again, they didn't lose any time because the administration stepped up again and said, we'll use administrative leave if they go past the FSCRA. So I think we're really fortunate here at the city because we've been able to keep all of our employees employed. We didn't have one layoff. We've been able to keep everybody working, and the majority of that has been for City Hall, either remote access or at home, and it's been very effective. A lot of our employees in the fire, police, and public works that have been the ability to work at home have been able to do that very efficiently. So those things have been extremely positive. Again, each department head, and I say kudos to all of them because they've been very accommodating in that they have sat down and assessed with each of their employees what they felt their risk level was, what they thought that they needed in order to be able to work safely, because that's what our intent was, to make sure everybody felt like they could work safely, what did that look like. And we have some folks that have real compromised situations, and so we were able to get them out of there, out of the workspace and into their home as soon as possible. And let me tell you, some of those accommodations were quite extensive, but we jumped in, the administration backed us up, and we made it happen. So I just wanted to also talk a little bit about the fact that we have, again, the emergency responders. And one of the big challenges for us in the beginning was, as you know, we struggled with staffing at the police department. We struggled with some staffing in regard to the fire department. We've had some turnover over there. So one of the big goals for my department was to make sure that if people were in a situation where they were exposed, that we could get them tested quickly and get them back to work. Because the greatest risk for us is to have to stop providing services. So right alongside with not having to lay anybody off, we have not had to minimize any services to the citizens of Fairbanks throughout this. So that's another great accomplishment. So when we were talking about how we were going to make sure the testing was facilitated, the hospital was generous enough to order some first responder testing kits, which allowed us to have a real quick turnaround on testing. unfortunately, there's a lot of first responders in our area, and suddenly in the last month, there's been kind of an increase, as you've noticed, I know, in those numbers of folks that needed that testing ability, and they ran out. So we were gracious when the mayor picked up the phone and called Victor Joseph and said, hey, we're in a situation right now where we can't get our folks tested as quickly as they need to get them back out on the road. And through that relationship between the city of Fairbanks and Tanana Chiefs and, of course, Chief Andrew Isaac Health Center, we were able to create that relationship that allowed us to now test at Chief Andrew Isaac. We have a very great opportunity there. Their tests can turn around there in like 45 minutes. I mean, it's just amazing. They don't send any of their tests out. They do it all in-house. And so 45 minutes to an hour, and they have the test results back. We've learned a lot through this process about how to test and when to test and how to keep people, you know, positive at home and how to keep people happy about coming back to work every day when it's just sitting in their extra bedroom with their dogs like I am right now. And dogs are like children, you know, they try to pull all your attention. But I just wanted to make sure that the Diversity Council understands that this has been a very trying time, but we have, I think, been very successful in all aspects of stepping up to the challenge. And we've had great support from not only our administration, the mayor and Mike, but also the council that has allowed us to do things like continue meetings like this that allow us all to stay home and stay safe, and rather than having to go out in the community for when we really don't have to. So I just wanted to say thank you, and I'm certainly able to answer any questions if anybody has any for me.
Thanks, Angela. I appreciate that. And when I come around to are you gonna be hanging on for a while? Okay, so when we get down to the members' comments, they might have some questions. I want to make sure we touch on all these subjects tonight. Under diversity topic of the month, I want to cover a few things. The first thing I do want to cover is one of the elephants in the room for me has been the word mask. And every day I get emails from people saying, mandate them. And then I get emails that say, don't mandate them. Don't force us. So I just want to explain to all of you what I've been telling the public. Early on when this thing started, I was getting some heat to close bars and restaurants in Fairbanks. But you guys know that I only have authority of the city itself. And Mayor Ward doesn't have the same mandate power that I do out in the borough. It's very wonky because we're a city within a borough. So if I did close the bars and the restaurants, I didn't want to cause a rush of traffic into the Pump House or Pikes or something else that was in the borough. So I called the governor's office, talked with him. I told him he's the only one that can blanket it for us. He can take that off my shoulders by doing it for the borough because he's the only one with the authority, and then the city's in there. So when it comes to masking, I have the authority, but here's the problem with it in the city limits. I've been really struggling with this, but I can't enforce a mask mandate in the city limits. I certainly can't send the police out to watch people doing this. I've talked to Mayor Ward. He doesn't have the mandate power to do it. But I was recently thanked by the hospital for the amount of time and effort I put into telling the public to mask and to stay 6 feet apart and to wash your hands. I've been carrying that banner really, really, really hard. And that's kind of like a mandate. It's less authoritarian, if you will. If I mandate the thing, I have no way to enforce it, and it's more ceremonial. And I don't want to get people angry at each other. My sister lives in Anchorage. And she told me after the mayor down there mandated it, she started seeing people, following people with their phone, posting them that they didn't have it on, and it caused a lot of negative. And of course, I'm not a Facebook fan anymore. I think it's a cesspool for the most part. And it was turning really uber nasty. And not all over the town, just in some of the examples. So I did talk to the governor. He might be leaning. I know today he said no mandates. I saw that in the news. But if we start increasing more and more every day statewide, I think that will be on his plate again, along with Commissioner Crum. I don't know what he'll do. But I'm not doing a mandate right now. I'm really encouraging businesses, and I'm encouraging individuals. And I've even got in front of me, the two mayors and I got together and we put out a proclamation supporting masking. I just signed it. It's going to be put out to the public. It's signed by Mayor Ward, Mayor Welch, and myself. And it tells people to mask up when they're near others, stay 6 feet apart. It's a really good three mayors commitment, and it's already been put out to the public. So I just want the Diversity Council to know that if someone says to you, you know, the mayor should mandate, it's easier said than done. Easier said than done to just force people to put on a mask. I think a lot of people would resist it, and it might get worse. That's just my opinion, folks. And I've also talked to our city attorney about it. It's even a little bit wonky there too, in the word mandate. So I just want to cover that and kind of let you know what was on my brain. Today also, I signed a three-mayor proclamation about the Americans with Disabilities Act. We signed a proclamation borough-wide. I just got this today, as a matter of fact, because it's been going on for now 30 years. It was originally signed by President George H.W. Bush, and it was establishing a clear and comprehensive national mandate for the elimination of discrimination against folks with disabilities. So we signed that today, so that's a good thing that the mayors did, so I wanted to pass that to you as well. Two other resolutions that have been passed recently. Right after the tragedy that happened with George Floyd and everything that's taken place since that time, the Fairbanks North Star Borough and the City of Fairbanks both issued resolutions. They had separate wording. They weren't the same in your packet. You should have a copy of not only Resolution 4921, which is the City of Fairbanks, you should also have the one from the Fairbanks North Star Borough. And I won't read them to you. You have them there to take a look at, because I want to get to Chief Reeder and her update on the police. But what this has done, there's actually some good things that came out of this when it came to policing and putting a focus on policing. It gave us a chance to relook at things. And I know that one of the first calls I got with disgust was from Chief Reeder. She wasn't happy, and it's made policing a little bit tough in the nation right now, as you're aware. And for good reason, I understand why people are upset. Totally get it. And so what I did is I went to the chief, and I said, we need to get ahead of some things. We need to talk about this, because Chief Reeder put some things in place already earlier having to do with training and special training, and I'm going to have her touch on that in a minute. So we need to get to the public and tell them what we've already put in place and what we can strengthen now in light of those events, all right? So I want to put that to you, and it's really important. And also, I want to thank Chief Reeder for something else. You know, when they did the rally through the middle of town, there was like 600 people at that rally. And before it even started, Chief Reeder had a really great meeting with the NAACP and the Native movement. I reached out to them too, and we said, what can we do to make it easy for you that day? So I authorized a blocking of Cushman Street. It was peaceful. There was, you know, I was hoping for that, and that's exactly what Fairbanks did. And Fairbanks is really good at doing that. And it was a good, peaceful rally, which I had no trouble with at all. But folks were on edge, and I get that. You compound that with isolation. You compound that with a virus, you compound that with social distancing and masks, it's really caused a tinderbox all over the nation this year. And it's not lost on me at all. I want you to be aware of that. I'm going to go ahead and have Chief Reeder jump in here, because part of the diversity topic of the month, as you can see there, is local government response to the murder of George Floyd. I just told you that we passed a resolution, which you can read. And then so did the borough, Fairbanks North Star Borough did as well. But a lot of the focus has been on the Fairbanks Police Department. I'm going to ask her to touch on things that she's been doing, things she's going to do now, and also update us on some good news. We had some retirements, which isn't good, of course, but we've also got some new hires. So I'm going to turn this over to Chief Reeder right now for some good information. Chief, go ahead, please.
Fine. Thank you, Mayor. And hi, everybody. It's good to see you in this new era that we have of talking through a TV screen or a video screen. But it's good to see everybody's face. And thank you, Mayor, for your comments. I'll talk about training first, since the mayor started to talk about that. So before the incident in Minneapolis, we, the NFPD, had already started moving towards trying to get more training for officers. I think I spoke with the council months ago and talked about some training that we had last fall. We had crisis intervention training and got quite a few officers trained at that point in crisis intervention. We had Bureau of Justice Administration came up here on a grant and did some de-escalation training last October. I had contracted with and had verbal judo that was planned to come up in May of this year. And of course, COVID kind of put a kibosh on a lot of training, put a kibosh on a lot of things. So after COVID has kind of done some of its thing, we have the instructor now rescheduled, and he'll be here the first week of August and for verbal judo training. And the entire department, everybody on FPD, all the way up through me, will be taking that course. It's a two-day course. And so it's labor intensive for us. Obviously, it's costly. It's not just the cost of bringing the instructor up, but it's the cost of having to train half the department on a two-day course, and the other half of the department's going to have to work overtime to fill those positions, and then we flop it. We take a day in between, and then we flop it and send the other half of the department to the training. But I wanted to do that. I was committed to doing it months ago because I believe that we have to give officers all the tools we can possibly give them and the different strategies that they can use in order to try to de-escalate situations on the street. And so that was critical that we do that. We've invited other departments within the interior in. We don't have a lot of space available. One of the things that we found out last week was that not only do we social distance within the city, but the Westmark and other hotels that have conference rooms also social distance. So that really cut down the amount of students that we can have, but it at least gave us more than trying to shove everybody into our briefing room at the police department. So that's going to take place in August. My hope after that is that I will send out a couple of officers when we're able to safely send people out and become instructors in verbal judo. And then that will give us two folks here on the ground in Fairbanks and allow us to continue to do ongoing training in verbal judo, because this can't be a one-hit wonder, if you will. We have to consistently train this and consistently keep officers up on it year after year, with new officers coming on and with our officers who go through the training in August. It's imperative that we continue to train them in that, and so that they're, it's like any training, the more consistent you are with it, the more you train it, the better that you're going to be at it. Crisis intervention training was supposed to be this spring as well, to get more officers trained. We haven't been able to get that rescheduled as yet, so right now we've got, I believe, 18 of our officers who are trained in crisis intervention. My hope is to get everybody else trained in that field once we get those instructors able to get back in here and back up on step, if you will. In October, we plan on having implicit bias training with an instructor coming in from the lower 48 as well to train us. It's a one-day class on implicit bias. I'm actually very interested in all this training, but that one interests me a lot because of some of the things the instructor told me about. He said, you know, so many people think that they don't have biases, you know, that they have no bias, they have nothing. And he says that everybody has an unconscious bias, whether they think they do or not, everybody has a bias of some sort. And so this training in implicit bias is a lot of scenario-based that brings out what you think you don't have. So I think that's going to be a very interesting course. I think it's going to be eye-opening for all of us that attend that. Moving on to a little bit of what we're doing here at the PD, and I have to say, with the recruiting that we're doing and the trying to get our staffing up, I can't thank Angela enough in HR for working with us on all of our trying to get recruiting and getting the hiring and stuff streamlined. I think we've done a great job at it. It's been a big team effort to do that. And over the last year, we've lost some folks, but we've replaced folks. Currently, we're about 20% down on staffing. We have 9 vacancies. Lieutenant Foster retired at the end of June, but we promoted a sergeant into his position. And then just last week, we brought in a lateral lieutenant from Bethel Police Department, a female, Amy Davis, who was the acting chief for a bit out in Bethel and comes to us with about 10 years of experience. So I'm really excited to have her as a lateral lieutenant on the department with that type of experience. We have two new officers that in process with the city yesterday who will be going to the ALITS Academy, the DPS Academy down in July in Sitka. So they're leaving in about 8-9 days. They'll be heading out and going to Sitka. They, however, will not be on the road as a solo officer until probably next March, which is about how long it takes to send somebody to an academy, bring them back, put them through field training. It takes a bit of time, which is why lateral hires are important to us. In May of this year, we stood up graduated another female officer from APD's Academy. We sent her to APD. She's the first female that we've hired since 2017. And she's the first FPD officer that went to an academy other than ALITS Academy. So the first time we've tried out APD as an academy option, and I think it worked out really well for us. And she graduated on June the 5th or June the 4th, and she's currently in field training right now. So that's good for us as well. So that puts us up to 4 females on the department now, which is pretty good. So in May, we stood up public safety testing, which is an online testing and kind of a recruitment company. And we stood them up online so that we can have our applicants actually look online. It's used throughout the nation, but they look online if they're interested in law enforcement. They actually are invested in it because they have to pay for their testing. They choose the department that they want to go to. They pay for the testing, where in the past, we actually paid for applicants to come in and test. So we've had that up about 6 or 7 weeks. And interestingly, for the 9 vacancies that we have 3 candidates for each vacancy that we have currently sitting in public safety testing. And those applicants are applicants that have passed the written test. They're either waiting to pass the physical test or they've already done their physical testing. We work in conjunction with that program with Alaska State Troopers and Juneau PD. It's kind of a collaboration between all the agencies, which is something that I've never seen, because agencies are always kind of like, no, these are people that are interested in us, and they don't want to share that information. But we've networked with all those agencies to try to do what's best for all law enforcement in Alaska and to work with each other, to proctor test if we need to, to do what we need to do to get motivated, highly qualified individuals that are good for the particular agency that they're looking at. Right now, we have 4 people who are in background who have we've just pushed to background, so they've passed their physical agility, they've passed their written test, they've been given conditional offers, and they are now in background. And 2 of those 4 are also female, and we have. Several lateral officers who are interested in coming to FPD, and I'd like to say with the support of Angela and HR, with city manager or chief of staff Mike Meeks, and with the mayor, who I collaborate with a lot on all of this, we were able to get the city council last night, and thank you Councilwoman Rogers for your support on this last night, to pass an alternate work schedule. A 2-week on, 2-week off work schedule, which is a tool for us to be able to use for folks who want to come in and do that 2-on, 2-off. Other agencies in Alaska have used that. They're very successful. A lot of them are 100% staffed as a result of it. I would like to say that is a schedule that is not a forced schedule for anybody. It's something that is just an alternate schedule if somebody wishes to do that, that gives us an opportunity perhaps to get some other folks in here to get our staffing up. It's also going to give us some relief. You know, 9 positions down on a small department's a lot. You know, 20-25% of your staff, that's a lot of people that were down. So the more officers that we can staff and try to get back up to staffing, it's going to give us a good relief on the street. Trying to think if I left anything out here, Mayor. If I did, please jump in here.
I am going to jump in for a second because we've been making this diversity council sure listen a lot, and I really appreciate it because I wanted to cover a lot of ground. And then, of course, my goal was to make a follow-up meeting to revisit the DAP that we started working on, but there's been so much that has gone down in the city and in the nation. I wanted to make sure we brush on all of it. I will take a pause here, though, and since we've got Chief Reeder on the line, if any of you have a question for her, feel free to stick up a hand and we'll, you can, I'll call on you or we can save them for later, whatever. Okay, Shalissa, she has a question. So let's unmute Shalissa and go ahead, Shalissa, thanks.
I don't have a question. I just have a statement. I would like to thank Chief Reeder for all the things that she's doing for the police force, the diversity she's bringing. And also I know for a fact when she first came that she has been incorporating a lot of the systems in place before we even got to this point. So I thank her for her forefront of doing this when she didn't have to.
Well, and I thank you. And I want to also let this group know that I'm very serious about this. And like I said, when the tragedy happened in Minneapolis, one of the first calls I got was Chief Reeder. She understood the microscope that would be created by this in the policing world. And I told her, I support police. I just don't support bad policing or police officers that can't do it right. And so I've been talking to her a lot about this. I'm not an expert on this. I'm not an expert on implicit bias. I'm not an expert on any of these things, but I'm willing to learn. And we're bringing it to the department. I want to make that really clear. And I also know some of the other suggestions have been, you know, mental health professionals and things. And there's a place for those types of people and those types of skills within our police department in some form or fashion. She's already thinking about that kind of thing. I don't know where it fits in yet. I'm not an expert. I certainly, you know, can't speak for Chief Reeder, but these are things that have been on her mind ever since all of this came to light. So I do want to publicly thank her. And it's not just Chief Reeder, you know, Angela came in too with her thoughts and Mike Meeks, we've all been talking about it on a very real level. So you can all know that she's working very, very hard on this kind of thing. I do support police. I just don't support the bad policing. And nobody wants them out quicker than the police departments because we need police officers to help us in these things. We just had another shooting yesterday and you know, we need them for those kinds of things, but we also need them to be well-trained in sensitivity training, implicit bias training, weapons training, all of that is important. All of it is. And I know under Chief Reeder, she's taking it very seriously. So I wanted to do that. Is any other questions for Chief Reeder? Please stick up a hand. We're happy to do it. I know a few people said they had to leave by 7. We're only 6:30, so we're doing pretty well. All right, so Chief Reeder, I interrupted you. Did you have some more stuff to cover, please?
No, Mayor, I was just mention real quickly, I apologize, is my dog. Sorry. Okay. Let me just take care of her.
Right. Well, I can continue to talk then. So I just wanted to let the diversity council know that, and I talked to the clerk about this, about public meetings. I'm not prepared yet to open up City Hall to public meetings going forward. She knows this. So we're going to meet again in August. And looks like the next meeting date is August 11th. Let me get everyone's opinions right now. How does everybody look for August 11th? I'm gonna let you, okay, thumbs up from Jose. All right, let's do thumbs up. Angela, Bobby's a thumbs up. Andrew's a thumbs up. All right, Chief Reeder, it's not good for Sarah, it's good for Doug. All right, Kenita, how's it look for you? Good? Okay. So far, good for everybody. I'm sorry, Sarah, but see, what I want to stress here, and Juanita's got a thumbs up too. Thanks, Juanita. My hope was to revisit. If you look under unfinished business, folks, 11A, the notes from March 10th, there's a whole bunch of notes there that we did that day, the day that Sarah ran that meeting, remember? And we talked a lot, and we ate a lot too. It was a great meeting. I provide that to you tonight as an informational, not to revisit tonight because we need to make it a thoughtful meeting, but to do it at the next meeting or the next date that we can. But I'd like to have Sarah there for that meeting. How does everybody look if we do it 1 week later on the 18th, just for shenanigans? Sarah, you're good on the 18th. Okay, let me get a show of hands on the 18th, folks. All right, Andrew's a yes. Yep, on Angela. Anita, yes. Jose? What time and how long? Well, it's always 5:30, and it'd probably go 2 hours long, I would imagine. But if you need to leave early, I get that, but we can get a lot out of the way first. We always start at 5:30, and we might make it, well, we probably won't have food because we're going to be on Zoom. But I got some thumbs up out of it. Juanita, are you looking on the 18th? I'm going to wait for her. Oh, thank you for that. All right, Jose, you might be late. No problem. Doug, was that a yes from you too? Okay, good. And Kenita, yes. So why don't we make it a clerk for August 18th? And for August 18th, what I would like to do is to have you go through all the notes from March 10th. And if you don't mind, because we don't know how many cases we're going to have between now and the 18th. So I told the city council this, and June knows this. I'm going to ask you to be flexible with me in case we have to do anything. We'll get notification out to you right away. Believe me, we will. Because we don't know what to expect in August. Oh, by the way, when's the first day of school? Is that August 18th for anybody, for parents?
It's yet unknown.
It's unknown still. Okay, so why don't we still plan on the 18th? I don't know what the heck's going to happen with school. I get a lot of questions about school, but then I say that's the borough mayor. Thank goodness he has to deal with, well, the school board and the borough deals with that. And I would like, I'm going to ask Chief Reeder to come back on the 18th and give another update. I might do another update from Mike Sanders if you enjoyed that. These things move every day. But the meaningful part of it has to do with the review of the DAP, the Diversity Action Plan. So I'd like you to go through notes, if at all possible, to get prepared for the 18th, because we need to pick up where we left off. And if we want to discuss other things too, we can. So what I'd like to do at this point is, I think I've yacked long enough for now. I've taken a lot of the air out of the room. I do want to go to each member of the Diversity Council and talk a little bit before we lose a few people at 7. So our co-chair is Sarah Harriger. So Sarah, I'm going to go ahead and just turn the floor over to you, and we'll go around and see if there's any comments or things or even questions for Angela, myself, or Chief Reeder, since she's here still.
Well, thanks for all the information tonight, Jim. That was great. It's really great to have Chief Reeder with us. I'm looking forward to a chance to get together again and talk again about the DAP. I hope we can make a progress on that at the next meeting. Other than that, I don't really have additional comments for tonight. I'm just glad that we were able to kind of get back in touch with each other and do a quick overview of all of the important things that have been happening in our community and our nation.
I really appreciate that, Sarah. I really wanted tonight to be a total update because you're with us. And hopefully, we've talked to the borough many times, by the way, for them to, and Jose, this is for your benefit. The Fairbanks North Star Borough appoints a member of this body. And Jeff Walters was that person. He resigned. I'm sorry, he turned out, so he didn't re-up again. So we're asking the borough to appoint someone. So we should have yet another person on here, hopefully soon. Let's go ahead and go to Jose for his first meeting. And Jose, do you have any questions or comments about tonight's meeting so far or about the information?
No, thank you, Mayor, and everyone else, again, for the opportunity. Getting the updates, I second what Sarah said, getting these updates. It's interesting to see it from a different scope. You know, there's a lot of media out there. I always filter it very carefully, but it's great to hear it from the local leaders like Chief Reeder and Mike Sanders on the homeless. Those were both very informative, surprising for me to hear it here today at our meeting, and then also from Angela hearing about the HR perspective and everything that was done. I know not just at the city, but in my organization with my company and many others around the country, we've all kind of had to be flexible. So thank you for the updates. That was helpful to learn a bit more today.
Thank you, Jose. Welcome. Juanita.
Just welcome, Jose, to your first meeting, and I am looking very forward to getting back on track and getting to working on our diversity issues within our community.
Thank you, Juanita. Bobby Dorton.
Nice to gather again and see everyone's faces. It's been a while. Things are going good for me. I've been quite busy with the board meetings that I've been having it with the Human and Health Service, the certification board there in Anchorage via Zoom. Things at work been great. I think mainly the newest news I have for you guys is that I got elected on to co-chair for the Fairbanks Reentry Coalition. So I plan on doing good things there. I definitely want to, the vision, the dream of what reentry looks like. I think that I would be a valuable key to that addition because I'm a person that's reentering, and I think, you know, some of the things that we could do is basically set platforms, right? Set platforms on how reentry should look, you know, and some of the experience that I have and willing to share will definitely grow that organization, and I'm very pleased to say that that I'm a part of that. I've always been a part of it, but I'm a bigger part of it now to where I'm actually, you know, I feel that I could be really heard at this point in my life. I could really be heard. And the Second Chance Grant is one of the biggest things that we're going to be working on there. So we're going to be working on working with the reentrants coming back from prison, and our city is going to be safer and stronger. And I think that one of the things that we got to look at is the safety of the city. And I keep reminding myself why I'm doing this, you know, to make the city safe again, not for my own benefits or my benefiting my friends or anything like that, but for making Fairbanks safer. And
thank you.
That's all I got.
Thank you, Bobby. And boy, go back 3 years ago to where you were to where you are now. You are truly a rock star to me. I really respect you a lot. And Jose, you got to learn his story sometime. It'll blow you away. Doug Tolley's battery is getting low. I want to respect that and let him add a few words before we go. Doug?
Yeah, great information. I good to hear the update on the CARES Act. I'm in the borough. But I had a business that went 4 months with zero income. Being in the tourism business seemed really smart in December. I'm not very smart at the end of March. Seemed really smart at the beginning of March, actually. But we went 4 months with zero income and did benefit from CARES Act funding, and it has kept us going. We have 7 employees now, and there's actually tourists coming here, and we have pretty significant COVID process we go through with our tourists. So I try to only go to businesses that are working on mitigating risk in their businesses. So even though you may not be able to do a mask rule, I do encourage all of you to wear a mask and to not make it a political issue. I know it's become that way on Facebook particularly. I can't go through 4 months worth of being shut down again.
I'm just sick of my own breath, to be honest with you, Doug. This has taught me to take better care of my flossing and brushing, to be honest with you.
It's helped us. We don't have to smell your breath, so that's good.
Amen, brother. Thank you, Doug.
Yeah, that's it. It's good to see people.
Yeah, it is. Andrew Aquino.
I don't really have any updates. I just wanted to, or hey, Jose. I see him everywhere. I just wanted to say what you said, Chief Reader, really gives me tons of hope. Hearing about all the different trainings that you're doing aren't just, I know they can seem reactive right now, but it's actually prevention, the work that you're doing. We want to prevent all of this stuff from happening, and the, you know, implicit bias training, I think everybody should have. It really works in internal processes as well. How one sees themselves, how I've been said, like, as, you know, as an Asian man, these are expected of me. How do I fight those implicit biases that I have against myself? Same thing for somebody that's in a blue uniform. So what you're doing, it's fantastic. I'm happy to hear about the demographic shifts. And also just keep on going. I'm happy you're joining the meetings, and I'm excited to keep on working on this plan.
Thank you, Andrew. Appreciate that very much. Kenita Williams, good to see you again. I love your glasses frames. I just have to say, those are really cool frames.
Thank you. I am glad that we had this meeting. It's good to see everybody. I echo everyone. Chief Reader, thank you for being proactive. Fairbanks has done it well. Like, when we look across the board at everyone else and all the things that have happened, Fairbanks has done things well on so many levels, in so many spectrums, even with the protest and everything else, looking across the board, you know, it makes me very proud. But I do thank you, Angela, for the updates. Everybody gave great updates and reports. Just hate that we can't hug and say hi and, you know, all that good stuff. You know, thanks for keeping us going, Danielle. I just appreciate everyone and all that's going on. And welcome, Jose. And thank you, Mayor. Thank you for everything that you're doing. Thank you for keeping everyone. I see you on Facebook and lives and things, saying wear the mask. I appreciate that. You know, just that reinforcement. So I'm just appreciative of everyone that's working hard, and good to see everybody, and just stay safe.
Thanks, Kenita. It looks like Jalissa may have dropped off, and I understand she had to go. I'll give it to June Rogers before we go. June, any comments, please? And Danielle, you might unmute her and see if she's got anything. I'm
trying to there we go. Here we go.
June, are you there? Okay, well, I can come back to her. Angela, anything to add? Nope, you did good. Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. Glad to see you all, and I'm hoping that this can be a regular thing again now, and we can start seeing each other. I think we had some great momentum, and excited to get back on track. So thanks, everybody. And Doug, I'm gonna do the yoga with the reindeer. I'm gonna be there.
Yes.
Yeah. Thanks, everybody.
Also, folks, let me just say, if anything does change for August, I'm gonna ask you for flexibility and patience, just in case if we have some big things come up at the city. We'll be the first to let you know. We'll bring updates to you, I promise. Tomorrow, just before we go, last thing, tomorrow starts the opening for filing for public office. And that's right across the board, the city, the borough, the school board. IGU is looking for people. So if anybody has any people that want to apply, you can also apply at the city. Just give Danny a call at the clerk's office, and we'll be good to go. Chief Reader. Oh, you're muted.
I'll wait till you're done, but before we go, I just want to say something really quick after you're done.
Right. No, that's okay. I was going to ask for an adjournment. So go ahead.
I just wanted to real quick tell everybody, because I know I went a little long, that over the last couple of weeks, we have been doing, coming full circle on bringing the soldiers home that we all escorted out last September when they deployed the Striker Brigade. We did escorts for every single wave that went out to send them off on their deployments, and they're now returning home. We've done about 6 escorts. We have 3 more to do as each wave returns. I'm really proud of the community who has been standing by the sides of the roads. It's really heartwarming to see the kids with the signs and the people with the welcome home signs that aren't even related to the military other than the fact they're community members. And bringing those men and women home has just been, it's been great. So I'm a vet. I love the fact that we're doing it. And I just wanted to, the officers have been doing a lot of volunteering of their time to do it. And, you know, the military is part of our community, and I'm real proud of everybody for doing it. And to the mayor for supporting us and allowing us to do it and clogging up traffic a bit while we're getting them all home. So thank you.
Thank you, Chief Reeder. Kenita, give me a thumbs up if you're making a motion to adjourn. Thumbs up. And Jose, give me a thumbs up for a second. All right. Thanks, folks. Godspeed to everybody. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you. Have a nice evening.
Thanks, guys. Good to see you.
This concludes the podcast of the City of Fairbanks City Council meeting. Please visit us at www.fairbanksalaska.us.